there's so much more to the experience. It's how you feel it. It's how you see it. So design innovation is really about what are all the things that we can do with design to elevate that experience and make it easy to use, delightful to use, fun to use. Every click that you go through, how can we make you feel our brand? How can you make you feel Airbnb?
Welcome to Dive Club. My name is Rid, and this is where designers never stop learning. This week, we get to go behind the scenes and look at how design operates at Airbnb with their VP of Design, Teo Connor. We get the backstory for their winter release, hear a little bit about what Teo's looking for when hiring designers, and one of my favorite parts is seeing just how intentionally Airbnb is investing and adding just a little bit of extra magic into their visual language. There's a lot in this episode, but before we get into all of the details, I had to know, what the heck is it like as the VP of design at Airbnb?
It's actually something that a lot of people ask me. To kind of make sense of it, I think it's good to know a little bit about my background. It's been a bit of a journey. I actually started my career as a traditional graphic designer in London, pre-social media, pre-smartphones. So, you know, ancient times. It kind of sounds like crazy talking about it. It was a really awesome time in London where I was able to work in lots of incredible design agencies and ad agencies where it was a real focus on craft, fine-tuning my taste, got to work with like really amazing illustrators, motion designers, things like that. I then went on and co-founded a little design studio called No Days Off, which probably gives you a little bit of a sense of my character. Maybe it was a bad idea giving us that name, but we did. Ran that No Days Off for like 5 years, which was awesome. Did some stints in the fintech industry in London, which was really cool. And then found myself heading to Silicon Valley to work at Apple at their human interface design team, which was incredible and totally, totally daunting. I was like, oh my goodness. I'd come from London where I was deeply embedded in the design industry. I was really connected, knew how to get stuff done. And then I showed up in Silicon Valley and at Apple, didn't know anyone, didn't know how to get anything done. And, you know, I was probably suffering from a little bit of imposter syndrome, like, you know, gosh, what am I doing in this place? But it was totally terrifying and also totally transformational. Because had I not made that move, I wouldn't have found out that I actually, one, love product design and experience design, or that it kind of existed as a thing, really, in the way that it's done at Apple, and that I'm good at it. So it was like, thank goodness I made that move. And I would say that to anyone who's, you know, at a crossroads in life where they're like, should I go to this place where I'm going to like know nobody and like be a total fish out of water? And that's scary. Like, totally do it, because those experiences are the places where I found that I've kind of like learned a lot about myself. But yeah, being at Apple, I was able to learn how to work in that functional model that's quite unique to Apple, and worked on some amazing things, watch faces, to a lot of stuff in Apple Wallet, and then ultimately Apple Card. And that was something that to this day I'm really still proud of, was able to work on the software experience, but also the hardware, the physical card with the ID team. And I kind of felt like after that, I could stay at Apple and that would be cool, but I'd kind of done enough to feel like, you know, I was ready for something new. And I got the call to go to Airbnb. And similar to like the jump from London and being like in a totally new experience, going to Airbnb presented itself like that. At this pivotal moment for the company, they'd just come through the pandemic, you know, the IPO, you know, looking to do big things. So yeah, I jumped into Airbnb and found myself at an organization that was kind of like ripe for a lot of change.
Can you share a little bit more about that? Like, in what ways was Airbnb ripe for change?
Yeah. So first I got to have an interview with Brian and also with Hiroki Osai, and both of them are really compelling and, you know, incredible people. And Brian kind of gave me some insight into some of the things that he was planning for Airbnb. And I was like, yeah, you know, like, sign me up. Sounds awesome. When I joined, so like 2021, a lot of the vitality of the app had that Airbnb had had in former years had started to wane a little bit. It had become a little bit flat and predictable. And, you know, Brian's noted this, you know, and commented about it himself. And at that moment, he was starting to transform the company and move it more functional. So, you know, at that time, it was divisional. He's moving it functional, inspired by Apple. And obviously, I'd just come from Apple and knew a little bit about, you know, working in a functional environment and what it might take for a design team to be successful. And so, you know, I started out as a senior director, and I was running just a few tracks in that environment. But when I moved into the VP role, that was really when I started to make some changes to ensure that we were kind of set up to really thrive in this new functional world. And a lot of that was really about, firstly, empowering designers to be designers. And you're like, what does that mean? Airbnb, where they'd gone through this kind of hypergrowth moment and become more divisional. There were a lot of designers, I think, through necessity, who had become more like program managers, product managers, really great at sort of organizing work, pushing work forward, you know, understood business metrics, things like that, but weren't really champions for pushing design innovation forward. And I think that the app had started to lose a little bit of its soul because of that. And so really, that was something that I really prioritized. So it was, you know, bringing in talent that one could function really well in this functional organization, had really high craft, and up-leveling the team so that they could show up as designers and really just own being that. You know, when you're in a functional team, you're going to have a really great business lead. You're going to have an amazing product marketer. You're going to have amazing engineers. Everyone's going to be showing up as an expert. And so for the design to really excel and for us to really like shape the work that's happening, you want to have designers that in those groups that are really speaking from a place of expertise. So that was something that was really critical. I would say also bringing in talent that were, especially the leaders, were really still able to be in the work. So still able to be designers. And the reason that's important is if you want your team to kind of be experts in design, and you want them to be, you know, showing up as leaders, you need their leaders to be able to know what they're talking about and to kind of uphold that craft and to be able to say, like, you know, we could, you know, change that interaction, or we could do this differently. They, you know, they're going to be upholding that high bar. So there's a shift away from the design managers or leaders being just people managers, which sometimes happens in organizations, and really still being able to be in the craft and being, you know, trusted and respected design leaders. And that's been a big shift that's happened on the team as well.
One of the products that I'm most excited about right now is called Play. It's a tool for designing and prototyping mobile apps. Now look, I think our current tools do a great job with visual design, but there's so much more to designing a product than just what it looks like. It's how it feels, functions, and moves, and that is where Play comes in. You can design in their freeform canvas or even import your UI from Figma, but what makes Play so different is you can design with native iOS materials. That means you get access to all of Apple's native gestures and core animation for creating prototypes. It's pretty powerful stuff. So if you're designing a mobile app right now, I cannot recommend Play enough. Head to dive.club/play to get started. Listen, friends don't let friends use Figma's native file search. It's been over a year since I've taken my cursor and clicked into that input and typed the name of a file that I'm looking for. And that's because Raycast's Figma file search extension is free and 10 times faster. I have it wired up to a hotkey, so at any point I can just type option F, the name of the file that I'm looking for, hit enter, and then boom, it opens directly in Figma. It's just another reason why I use Raycast for pretty much everything that I do on my computer. I seriously cannot recommend it enough. Head to dive.club/raycast to get started. That's R-A-Y-C-A-S-T. Okay, now on to the episode. What does design innovation look like to you? And then what are some of the ways that you're trying to draw that out of the org?
One of the things that's really important is thinking about the app not just as screens and flows that people are like moving through. Obviously, you know, the experience of me moving customers and our users and our hosts through the tools and through the app, we think about that deeply. But there's so much more to the experience. It's how you feel it. It's how you see it. It's, you know, there's a full 360 experience. And so design innovation is really about what are all the things that we can do with design to elevate that experience and, you know, make it easy to use, delightful to use, fun to use, makes you want to engage and come back and use it again. Once you want to use it over other experiences. And so, you know, one of the things that we've been doing is bringing in more haptic feedback and more tactility to the experience. And so, you know, when you have a little welcome moment or celebration moment, you're going to get this like beautiful, we've got this like confetti experience that we've designed that you can put like lots of different kind of illustrations into. It's really fun. Or things like our group travel postcards where they flip round. Every little piece of motion, every click that you go through, how can we make you feel our brand? How can you make you feel Airbnb? And so that's where the design innovation is coming in. You know, we're thinking about how can we move the app from where it was feeling previously a little bit flat, bringing in more 3D elements, some of the elements that you see from our advertising campaigns. So there's like a lovely example of this is with our guest counter. So we've got this guest counter. It actually was in our listings tab for hosts. So, you know, we completely overhauled our host tools last year. And we had this little guest counter. And we could have just done a simple design where you just, you know, you have the increment, decrement. You can click up, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 people, fine. And we had that design, by the way. We had that like in Figma. We could have used it. But we wanted to have something that, you know, the hosts really enjoyed using. And partly this is because like the host tools had previously been kind of functional, but they hadn't had much love for a really long time. So when we launched the listings tab, we really wanted to do something to let our hosts know that we really cared about the tools that we were providing for them, that we wanted them to engage with them, we wanted them to use them. And, you know, obviously like, and the guest counter was that, so you can, you know, click through all the little people and there's this like fun bit where there's, you know, a bit of an Easter egg with a llama at the end that isn't quite a person. I'll leave you to find that. And there's, you know, lots of little fun Easter eggs through our app. We love putting those little touches in there because it's a way, we enjoy it. But I think also it's a way that we can show that we really care about the product. You know, we care. We want you to have like little delightful moments when you're, you know, running your business if you're a host, or, you know, booking a stay if you're a guest. And so that's one of the ways that we really bring innovation and design in to the platform.
I love that you said like, we enjoy it. And that can be like a reason for investing in something. It kind of ties back to this idea of designers being designers and like, actually, yeah, like it feels good to make things that you are personally proud of and are a form of like creative expression almost.
100% as creatives ourselves, as designers, we want to do magical stuff. Obviously we want to do stuff that is really thoughtful, that works really well. You know, it's, you don't want to just make stuff that's like magical and beautiful and doesn't work or is really hard to use. So, you know, one shouldn't supersede the other. But yeah, we get enjoyment out of doing those things. Another example is with our new winter release. So we've got brand new checkout that we're bringing. That personally gives me a lot of joy because the checkout that we had previously had not really been updated in a real way for a long time, but it had had a lot of additions to it. And so over time, this kind of page had grown and grown and grown. The designer just had all these additions added to an old design that probably was never set up to be added to in that way. So you've got this really long page. And it was hard to use. Key information was like hidden, you know, like the price, the book it bought, way, way, way down this like really long page. Not the best experience. With our redesign, which is really fun. It's like, well, how can we take that, get all the information that you need and make it really easy to see, really glanceable? Let's like put the price and the book it bar up top and have it there permanently. This isn't like a fun kind of like delightful design treatment or innovation, but one of the big innovations was being able to get four lines of legalese, four lines of legal copy down to one line. And that gave me a huge amount of joy and is a reflection of really, you know, new kind of cross-functional model and functional teams. Previously, when we were divisional, everyone had their little section in that checkout page that they were kind of responsible for and had like, you know, ownership of or feelings about. And so it makes it much harder to make like bold changes and bold decisions. In the functional model, we're able to come together and like, we really need to make this checkout page much better. We need to improve the experience for our guests. They need to be able to get in and get out. We need to get out of the way, you know, let them book and get on with their lives. And let's make sure that they can book with confidence. So all the information that they need is just there on a single screen. So that's been another sort of like innovation in a different way, where it's not just about the visual design.
You've used this phrase functional org a few times now. Like, can you just give like a little bit of context for people listening who maybe are not familiar with what that looks like? Like, why was that a strategic shift that Airbnb decided to make? And what are some of the ways that that impacts the way that design operates?
A functional org is all of the functions. So design, marketing, supply, engineering, product marketing, you know, you name it. They're the functions. They all work together to achieve big goals and big ambitions. And I think like the advantages of functional are really about going after those big things, new ideas, new innovations, that having the full weight and focus of the company focused on them, and really about alignment. And, you know, I think Brian's talked about this a lot in various interviews and things like that. Coming out of the pandemic, you know, feeling like the company had gone in a direction or lost its way a little bit. And he was really looking for a way to bring Airbnb back to its roots, bring it closer in and have everyone more aligned on a single company roadmap and on a few key visions. And so, you know, when you're a divisional, you can actually do a lot. It makes a ton of sense for lots of organizations to be divisional. You can kind of cover a lot of ground and you have small teams that are focused on things independently of the wider organization. And I think when you're in hypergrowth, that's a really great way to be, when you're just trying to like build, make lots of things and get them out in the world. But for this moment in time for Airbnb, I think it's been really fundamental to move to this functional model so that we can, one, like pull the organization in, really get focused and go after some big ideas. Hiroki Asai often describes it as, you know, you have streams and rivers. And so in divisional, you've got these streams, then we're all going after different things and you're covering a lot of ground. With functional, you're really about a river. You're bringing all those streams together to go after one big thing. And that's what we've been doing. And for design, I think that the functional model is really the way that we've been able to get quality back, you know, be able to focus on craft, be empowered to do that. Because, you know, we can really say, well, as a design team, what's our remit? You know, we are accountable for design innovation. We're, you know, the guardians of that. And so we want to really be the best at that.
I want to go back to the word vitality that you used earlier, and you just used quality of innovation. I guess my question is, when you're a functional org, are there examples of types of innovations that are coming from like top level, you leadership, this is how we want design to innovate at Airbnb, versus an individual functional team, you know, really just trying to push the boundaries and figure out like what the Airbnb app can be and how it can feel?
I think like a good example of that is in our winter release, there's been a big push around personalization. You can come to our app every day, you can open it previously, and it probably wouldn't like change or acknowledge you. And, you know, the experience that you would see and the experience that I would see would be very similar and generic, even though our needs are probably quite different. And so, you know, I think the app was very one size fits all. And that was something that, you know, as a company and Brian, you know, wanted to, you know, change and wanted our app to feel more personalized and more dynamic. I mean, that's the way of the future. And so we've been looking at a lot of designs that start to help with that. So one example is we've got this awesome new welcome guide that first, if you're a new user to Airbnb, guess what? We're going to acknowledge that. So we never used to do that before. You come up, you maybe never used Airbnb before, and we're going to treat you exactly the same as someone who knows how to use it. That's not a great experience. So the first thing, if you're a new user, you're going to get this welcome tour, and we're going to show you around the app and get you set up so you know what you're doing. You know how to use filters. You know how to use the map. You know how to book things. And so that, you know, that's an example of personalization. That's coming from the top, a vision for the company. But from within our function, we're thinking about all the ways to bring that to life. So we're thinking about, you know, the interactions. How do we want to show the filters? How do we want to show a welcome tour? Do we want to, what new interactions do we want to bring in to bring those types of features to life? And so that might manifest in ways like our design system. What types of treatments are missing that we might need? Our image library, our icons and iconography. Our filters previously were a set, you'd go through a long list. There'd be very cute little icons, flat icons, but you'd see the same ones as I'd see. Now they're going to be personalized based on your search history. And how do we bring those to life so that it feels even more delightful? We've got this beautiful new set of 3D icons to show you things like different amenities like pools or, you know, instant book and things like that. And so we're thinking about the interactions. We're thinking about the visual design. We're thinking about how to use AI when appropriate and how to leverage that. So it's this meeting of taking our craft and our expertise in design and meeting that vision that's coming, you know, top down and contributing as our eng partners will be doing the same. So we've got, you know, awesome engineers that are coming in and thinking about how on their side, you know, how can they make things feel more fluid? How can they make the interactions more magical? You know, we used to do a lot of work where we'd be designing only, you know, in Figma for a really long time. And we'd then take, you know, flat designs and show them and look at them. And we'd be in that phase for a long time. Really, you only understand when a design is going to work when you see it on device. When you're actually playing around with it, we move now into prototype and using like real code much earlier on in the product development lifecycle. And that again is because our functional partners, our peers in engineering are up-leveling on their side too. So they're becoming like, you know, leaders in their function, and same goes for product marketing. So that's a little bit of, you know, I think like how you're seeing the vision coming from the top and meeting the functions and their expertise and kind of driving big ideas around personalization and other things forward.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the code piece, because I think that does show up like in some of the demos that I'm even seeing on Twitter, where a certain interaction or animation will happen. And I'm pretty good at Figma. There's just no way that I could make that in Figma. And so it highlights that collaboration where it's like pretty clear, like, okay, yeah, I'm thinking a lot of exploratory code is getting written. So for that to be kind of like a top level, hey, this is how we're going to evolve the way that we work, is really interesting.
What I love is when we start doing things like that in a small way. So it might be like one project and we have a team where we're like, okay, we've got this like new interaction and like how are we going to build it? You know, so an example of that from a while back now was we had the little passport animation that kind of like flew open and showed you the host passport and profile. And, you know, that was a kind of early example of that where we had like a static design and an idea, and then we sort of built it with the design team and with animators. And then it was like, but we need to get this into code real quick to see if it's going to work, because like this has to be super fluid for it to like make sense. Otherwise, it's going to just be awful. And so we had this like really great partnership. We've got like some really awesome specialist prototypers on the engineering team. And we were able to develop that really sweet interaction. And so that kind of way of working has now just been embedded into our sort of like product development lifecycle. And so that's like, you know, part of our process. We go from, you know, static designs, maybe some motion, some early Figma prototypes, and then quickly into, okay, real engineering eng prototypes and using real code. You know, it's great to hear you say that you've noticed it, because I really think that that's like making a huge difference to the work that we're able to ship.
So you said like a lot of things that I could pull on different strands. It's like tons of things to talk about. I think where I'd like to go a little bit deeper is the welcome experience that you're rolling out as a part of this winter release. Because, you know, there are a lot of different approaches that you could have taken to that general opportunity. So can you talk a little bit about how you all arrived at the Airbnb way?
For the welcome experience, we definitely wanted to do something that felt really intuitive, that didn't feel like it was getting too much in your way, you know, that you were like, oh, like it's a complete takeover. It had to be pretty short and snappy. We wanted to take you around all of the places that we knew. If you use Airbnb a lot, you kind of just know how to use it. You know how to like use the map and filters and things like that. But if you're coming to our platform for the first time, it is actually like quite a unique experience. And we really wanted to acknowledge that and make sure that we gave everyone a quick tour around, but we wanted it to feel personal to you. So one of the things that happens in that tour is that we take a screenshot of your screen. So the welcome tour is based on what you're looking at on your device. And so it's unique to you, which we thought was really important. So it really does feel personal from the off. We're welcoming you as an individual and, you know, what you're looking at. And so that was a big part of it.
You mentioned the 3D icons. When I was getting a little preview of the release, like that was definitely something that stood out to me. They're absolutely beautiful. And they are like this departure from kind of the like clean, flat design that you've kind of come to expect from Airbnb over the years. So maybe we could use that as an opportunity to just broadly talk about like what are some of the ways that you're trying to like push the visual language of Airbnb further and innovate on, you know, what it can be moving forward.
I think adding more three dimension, more things that like feel or look tactile, that you want to touch them. You know, we had like the monthly dial. So that like really crazy dial, you know, had like liquid feeling, and you wanted, you know, we wanted to encourage you to go and touch it and play with it, you know, and it had haptic feedback in it. We've put a lot of haptic feedback. So you're really getting this sense of the app responding to you. You know, like it's a conversation that it's there, it recognizes you. And so that's a big part of it. Much more feedback and things that make you want to, you know, touch and play with them. And more to come on that. I just like, you know, the team is so awesome as well. Like we've got designers on the team who are constantly thinking about this stuff. And to your point about, you know, things coming from the function and things coming from, you know, the leadership. And the vision obviously is being set by Brian and the senior leadership team, but we have incredible designers on the team that are just kind of bringing new ways of doing things, new ways of building things, new visual ideas to the table all the time. Probably part of my role is like, oh gosh, like we've got to save that one, you know, let's save that for the next release, you know, because there's just like so much great stuff. But it's awesome to see all of that stuff kind of coming into the app.
How do you foster this culture of visual exploration while still maintaining that sense of cohesion in the way that the Airbnb brand is represented in the product?
Yeah, we're being really intentional about it. I think it's really important to have a space where people feel that they can like experiment and explore and bring new ideas to the table. That's how we're going to keep, you know, our work fresh and alive, which is so important. We don't want to end up like losing our vitality again, but being really intentional about how we allow that to sort of, you know, grow and flow through the organization and the work that we're doing. So we have some really awesome work happening with our design system where we are currently in the process of updating it. So that'll be an exciting thing to talk to you about at a later date. But we basically have a system where we're taking elements that start to get used in our projects. So for example, the 3D icons, we started using them in the listings tab and we bring elements over into our design system and then sort of set them and share them. So people in other teams can start saying, okay, like we could start using elements of that in our work. And then once it starts to spread out, we bring it in and make it official in our design system. So it's sort of like a organic ecosystem where things are being built, they're getting tested. When we feel good about them, they're being brought into the system and then shared more broadly for others to use with some guardrails around, you know, how much or where. And so far that's been working really well. So we've got a team that's like looking over everything. They're going into every single project and really just trying to ensure that we keep everything coherent and picking up on trends. So you start to get trends, things that are happening in certain products that we can then be like, oh, that's great. Let's bring it over into this other team and make sure that they're using it in the same way. Sometimes I get like it's not the most fun part, but the person who has to be like, no, let's not do too much of that right now. Sometimes when something's really special and if you use it too much, then it starts to use its kind of surprising qualities. And so I have to be a little bit of the guardian of that.
I want to talk about just like process a little bit and maybe even looking at the design review process for one of these projects. Can you talk a little bit about how that works? And maybe you could even reference like something from the recent release as an example.
We have a really great design review process and just process in general. And it's been in the making, I'd say, of the last couple of years and is really starting to work well now. Within the design team, I'm really looking at work every week or every couple of weeks. And I'll be in with the design team and there'll be like a director there as well. And it's an opportunity to kind of have the different ICs, like share the pieces of work, what they're thinking about, really trying to like unblock ideas. And I can be there and the directors can be there to really share any insight that they're hearing from other tracks so that, you know, we can really shape and push the work forward. And then once we've had our sort of design team review, then we have another review, which is cross-functional. And so that will be like a VP session and we'll have my peers from product marketing, engineering, any function that needs to be in the room. You know, a good example is just to reference checkout again. You know, that's an example where we'll be looking at those designs as a design team. We'll then have another session where we're looking at cross-functionally. Engineering will be in there. You know, there's a really big lift for engineering with checkout when you think about all the different payment methods, things like that. We also use those sessions to prepare the work for taking it to Brian. And so that's really where we get aligned as well. So that piece around alignment, does engineering really feel confident that they can build this thing in the time? And like, let's discuss that together before we get to Brian so that when we're in the room with Brian, we're really talking about like what we can do and presenting the work to him in the best light possible. And that's our typical process. And then, you know, Brian will have his feedback and then we take that on and the cycle begins again.
Quick hypothetical for you. Let's say that you bring on a new design leader. What would be your advice to help that person succeed in some of these design reviews with Brian?
I mean, I share this advice often. And I think it's actually advice for anyone, not just with Brian. But I think that One, for your first few sessions, it's really great to be in listening mode. I think anyone who, you know, any company that you join, any design agency, whatever it is, anywhere that you go, at first, really listen and take time to kind of just absorb everything that's going around on around you, the different players. What are the engineering team concerned about? You know, what are the product marketing team trying to achieve? So really just understand everyone that's there, listen. Then when you have a good sense of the environment, then start to contribute. And I think sometimes there's that like feeling when you first join somewhere, you're like, oh gosh, there's a lot of expectations and I have to kind of like show my worth, and you can kind of jump in without really like having context, and that sometimes can backfire. So I always say, you know, feel empowered to take your time to listen and learn. And then in terms of, you know, going into a review with Brian, taking the time to do the work before you get there, being aligned with your cross-functional partners and going in as a team. So it shouldn't all be on one person's shoulders, to be honest. You know, when we're going in as a functional team, it is as a team. Oftentimes as a design team, we might be the ones presenting the work, and that can feel like everything's on your shoulders, you know, and that's tough. But taking the time to get everything in order with your team so you can go into that room feeling confident. And I think being really honest, never try and hide anything. Be accountable if something isn't liked or if something isn't going well, to not be defensive about it. Because, you know, I think it's always good to hear feedback. It's always good to understand like where we can improve things and do things differently.
Hey, it's Rid. I'm constantly asked about my favorite product, so I'm gonna take just 1 minute and give you a quick rundown of my stack. Desen is how I ship design changes without having to code. Framer is how I build my websites. Genway is how I do research. Jitter is how I animate my designs. And Play is how I design and prototype mobile apps. Visual Electric is how I generate all of my imagery, and Raycast is my shortcut every step of the way. Now, I've hand selected these companies to partner with me so that I can do these episodes full time. So the best way by far to support the show is to check them out. You can find the full list at dive.club/partners. Okay, now on to the rest of the episode. I want to talk a little bit about how working functionally empowers teams to take, you know, big swings. What are some of the ways that you've seen designers steward ambiguity as you're taking these big swings and like working towards these larger 6-month releases?
Yeah, the ambiguity thing is really hard. And I think some people absolutely love it. They're like, just throw me in. I want to be in the chaos. And that's where they get their like energy, you know, like things are changing and it's fast paced and, you know, you're right in the heart of things. And some people find that tough because it's like, oh, I don't know, you know, when, how long is this going to go on for? Are we always going to be in this state? And that can be uncomfortable. With the leaders in the team, we really try and be intentional about like finding, you know, those people who like being in that space and in that ambiguity, like, you know, giving them those opportunities. Any, you know, those who don't like it so much, there are places in the product lifecycle that you can have more kind of where things are more kind of known and you can be in maybe, you know, the execution phase of a project or, you know, in a part of the roadmap where, you know, the thing has been launched and you're optimizing it, things like that. So there's always those opportunities. But I also try and find ways to build resilience in the team. And a big part of that is about ensuring that people feel recognized for their contributions and know that the work that they're doing matters, even in, you know, something that feels ambiguous. Because I think that can be really hard. I've experienced that myself. You know, you're working on something and you're feeling really good about it. And then like the direction changes and you're like, oh man, like I worked on this for so long. And is it, you know, important? Or, you know, you're just waiting for the stuff to be released. And maybe your piece of work doesn't get released and it's going to go to a late release. And so for me and the other, you know, leaders on the design team, we really want to ensure that everyone feels really recognized for their contributions so that they can be in the ambiguous spaces, but know that everything they're doing is really important, regardless of whether we ship it or not. And for people to then sort of internalize that themselves, so that when they're in those spaces and it feels a little bit like, oh gosh, like, I don't know where this is going to go. Is it going to be meaningful? Is it going to matter? They can know that it always does. We have an event called Roadmap Review, and it's something that Brian does a couple of times a year where we basically review our roadmap. And it's mostly to key leadership, and it's an opportunity to kind of have a look at what we've just launched, have a look at what we're about to launch, and have a look at, you know, what we're planning to do in the future. We oftentimes have a full demo of everything kind of stitched together. And it's a really, really great opportunity to kind of see the, you know, enormity of what we're trying to do. It's something that we've been taking back to our teams to kind of show them, like, you know, your work, you might be working on this like piece, but this is what it ladders up to, this really big idea. And when you feel like you're part of that really big idea and that big vision, people feel really excited about that. And we can all look back once something gets launched and be like, wow, that's really cool. We just did like the winter release, or we just did the summer release. And, you know, it's bigger than just, I just worked on, you know, this one thing. You're actually, that one thing is part of the whole thing, and you can take your part in that bigger thing. And I think that's important for folks.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, even just looking through the deck of everything that was getting shipped, is I have to imagine that there is a real impact for just team morale, being able to all simultaneously celebrate a release at the same time, whereas most teams don't get that. I mean, I even have worked primarily for startups, and even within a 30-person team, you still don't get that because everyone's on different cadences.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's hard working to the release cycle, because that's a pressure. And we're constantly like, you know, you're balancing out, okay, we've got craft, we want to keep quality high, we've got like a really like hard deadline a lot of the time. Yeah. So, you know, we're working under a lot of pressure. But there is something about all of us work, like the whole company working towards that thing, that helps. And like you say, yeah, we all get to celebrate the launches, and we're going to be doing that with this winter release. We all get to like look at it and be like, yeah, that's really cool. We all did that. It's a way of working that I really enjoy and value.
In terms of ways of working, is there anything that we're not talking about that you think makes the way that design operates at Airbnb unique?
The only thing other than that I've already mentioned is really just having Brian at the head of the company. A lot of people have talked about this. It's not new. He's a designer. He cares deeply about design. I like to call it, we're in designer mode. You know, design is like the mode that we're all operating in. We're thinking about designing everything. Design is really important. And that's understood across the company. And it's something that, you know, as head of design, maybe in other organizations that aren't so design focused, aren't in designer mode, often having to go around other groups and advocate for design, advocate for a beautiful interaction and the resources to make 3D icons and things like that. And I'm sure it'd be hard to do that beautiful guest count animation and picker in a different organization. But with Brian there, you know, those things are like highly valued and highly important. And for the business, we recognize that, you know, by doing those things, they're an extension of our brand. And it's a way for people to connect with our brand, engage with it. And it's a way that we differentiate ourselves. So it has huge value. And so I say that that's probably a big difference, is that my role is less about advocating for design within the organization. And it's more about upholding quality and craft. I'm accountable for ensuring that we're constantly getting better, we're constantly like pushing the boundaries, and that, you know, we've got one of the best design teams in the world. And so it's a slight shift, but I'd say that's probably something that's maybe a little bit different in the way that we work at Airbnb.
Before I let you go, I want to talk about the people and the culture a little bit, because you talk about having one of the best teams in the world. I think pretty much everyone listening to this would agree. It's probably why they're listening to this episode. So can you talk a little bit about some of the traits that you recognize in the designers at Airbnb that you think make the team one of the best in the world?
Yeah, that's a lovely question for me to answer. At a base level, we've just got amazing craft and skill and talent. So like, I only want to talk about like those traits because they're just there as a given. But I think the other traits are optimism and this like positive outlook around the work and what we can do and what we can achieve, and really like being excited about achieving it. And that manifests itself in, you know, what we were talking about with, you know, folks that are designing new interactions, or, you know, making like 3D printed icons for us to reference to make things like golden tickets and other things like that. I think being really thoughtful about your work, how you show up in a team. You know, we're highly collaborative now. Our work is really interconnected. And so you have to be thoughtful about the folks that you're working with. I was really struck when I first came to Airbnb from Apple. Apple culture is very secretive. Don't share anything. You don't, you know, talk about anything. You know, is that person disclosed? You don't know, so you have to find out. I came to Airbnb and it's like, yeah, here's the Figma file. Here's the, like, here's all the stuff. Like, you want to have a look? Like, no problem. What do you need? Let me help you. I love that we've got that culture, and it's something that I love to encourage, that thoughtfulness. I think also having courage. So having the courage to really pursue bold ideas, to have a point of view. That doesn't mean like being the loudest voice in the room. It's not about that at all, but it's having the courage to, you know, be accountable if, you know, something doesn't go the right way. And that's something that I definitely try to like demonstrate to the team. You know, if something doesn't go well, I'll be like, you know, that's on me, and like, let's try and fix it. So I think people who have that mindset, it's really important. And then folks that just really prioritize quality and craft at all times. And that's pretty it. But the optimism thing is a big one, and the courage thing is a big one.
Tao, this has been amazing. Thank you for taking the time to give us a little bit of a window into just what makes Airbnb and the design culture so special. It's been really, really enjoyable, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are going to be inspired.
Thanks so much.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, if you want to go even deeper, each week I send an email out to over 10,000 designers with bonus resources and key takeaways from these conversations. So head to dive.club/email to sign up. Okay, I'll see you next week.